go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 80 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. Are there ladies out there, sorry, are there babes out there who really let their dogs fuck them? I saw a thing on the internet, it was a little discerning, actually it was very discerning. It was, I forgot what the stat was, but there's some crazy number of babes out there are letting their dogs that they own fuck them. Is that true? I don't know. I've never fucked a dog. I'm pretty certain that all the women in my life, and when I say women, it's my sisters and a few girl friends, and my mom, and my aunts, and all right, you know who women are. I'm almost certain none of them have had their dog fuck them. And if you're going to have your dog fuck you, you got to be the one getting fucked by the dog. I think that's the only way it can happen, because you have to be a female and the dog has to be a male with his red rocket inside of you. I didn't even know that was possible, but I did see a thing. I forgot where I saw it, but it was somewhere on X, and if I see it there, I'll cite it. I'll put it out there. I just always thought that was a myth. That was just like a joke. I have this rule that I'll never go out on a date with a horse person. And when I say horse person, I mean a lady who owns a horse. A reason being is a lady who's a horse lady, she'll always love the horse more than she'll love you. That's why you can never be in a relationship with a horse lady, because in her mind, if she could, she'd rather have intimate relations with her horse that she owns rather than you. I don't even know. I think the horse wiener is like super long, so it probably, unless you're a superwoman vagina, I don't think that works. But then apparently there is a good percentage. This isn't a minimal 0.0001%. No, it's over. We're talking full number percentage point of female dog owners who are having, I don't even know how they, I guess bestiality, but an affair with their pet. I do know of many lonely babes who have dogs for companionship, and there are plenty of guys too, but when it gets hard, can it get into a guy's asshole? So maybe there are gay men out there who are letting their dogs fuck them. You always hear a joke about the peanut butter. A lady will spread some peanut butter on her pubic area, and then the dog will lick it up. So I always gandered at there were always some crazy women out there who would, get off to their dog licking them. But I didn't actually know that there was actual penetration happening. Dog owner lovemaking. Can we call it lovemaking? That's an impossible question to answer. I don't even know how that statistic came up on my feed. How many women are really going to confess to who making love to their dog? And I use that term making love comedically here. That's obviously wrong. I think that is, we can agree that's animal abuse. Even though, I guess if you're a dog, it's pretty cool if you get to fuck your owner. Does human, oh boy, now we're getting it. Now I'm starting to think, well, what feels better? Does human vagina or the dog vagina that the dog gets with? Like, what does the dog prefer? I don't even know. Let's change topics. That's a very... I need to get some type of scientist, some veterinarian on here to interview, to answer questions like that. And I don't think any of my listeners, although I love you, I don't think any of you are smart enough to be a veterinarian. Changing topics. You might notice I'm wearing these jeans. I've been wearing them for about the last 2 months. Probably so verbal graffiti time, the last... is 2 episodes a week, so it's about 8 episodes. How often do you wash and dry your denim? I know some denim heads will say you never wash your denim. I've had these jeans, and I have one pair of jeans. I wear them all winter, usually from October through early April. I wear them every day. I don't wear them inside. Every time I go out, I wear this pair of denim jeans. I've had them for 2 years now, so I probably have worn them close to 365 times. I've washed them once, and I only did so because there was a lot of dirt on them. I did not dry them. Is that washing my jeans once every 365 wears, is that as disturbing to you as a dog letting her, a babe letting her dog fuck her? Which is worse in your humble opinion? I don't know. It is weird that I wash my shirts more than I wash my pants, because my pants is where all the filth is where my genitals, my butt crack, especially when you get the swampiness down there. I would just think that, well, obviously you got to wash your pants more than your shirt, but no, it's the opposite, because when I wear a shirt, I have stinky armpits. So if I wear a shirt for more than half an hour, I need to wash it because it has that permanent smell and it's close to my face. So I recognize it, or I take a whiff of it, whereas not so much by my pants because I am not flexible. And plus I wear boxer briefs underneath. It does seem like it makes more sense to wash your pants more often than your top. But my armpits are smelly, so maybe I should just be washing them both. But I don't. Because when you wash denim, it gets all stiff, and you gotta loosen them up again, and you feel like you gained weight because they don't snap. The button doesn't snap as... ooh, is my fly up? Yes, it is. You really gotta squeeze to get the button. Whereas when you're wearing them without washing them, it's loose. It conforms to your body. There's a little bit more breathing room. All right, you guys know how denim works. You're all adults. I do not have to explain the fabric that is denim to all of you. Let's get into something I found on Reddit this week. Comes from the subreddit Shopping Addiction. Shopping makes me feel beautiful. Basically the title. Okay. I was on a strict no buy the first half of the year, but I can't get back on the wagon. There are other things that I enjoy, but nothing makes me feel more validated, more glowy, more at peace than getting dressed up, leaving the house, and buying beautiful things I don't need. I work 3 jobs that are about validating and serving other people, plus I'm getting my master's degree. I have no in-person friends in my city and no romantic partner, so I am the only person who can validate me. When I buy something lovely that I don't need, I feel like I'm validating myself. I'm telling myself that I am good and loving and worthy of nice things. It's tangible. I can hold the beautiful thing I bought as proof that I am worth something. Don't get me wrong. I can internally validate when I need to, but shopping is just... it is a way of externally validating myself. Yes! Yes, sister! Yes! This is an advertiser's a wet dream. You're the reason why Don Draper made millions of dollars at Sterling Cooper, because he was selling the dream of consumerism equaling happiness. He was selling his advertising to women and guys like you and me. And it is me. When I read this post, like, I could have written this. Now, you're a much better writer than I am, so we're all thankful that you wrote it. But yeah, this is me. We are kindred spirits. That's a phrase that I seem to be using. Almost the very beginning of your post, I'm the same way. First half of the year is miserable for me. I have a low time preference. If you don't know, low time preference means you're willing to put put joy in the future. So you could be miserable now. If you get joy in the future, that's a low time preference. That's the way I live my entire life. So the first half of the year, from January 1st through June, I don't buy anything. I save all my PTO days, which I have. I think I have 23 PTO days per year. I save them all for post-Memorial Day. I load up the back half of the year with my vacation time. So that way, I have something to look forward to the rest of the year. I don't like blowing them the first half of the year. When I eat a meal, I think I've told this before on Verbal Graffiti, when I'm having an entree, when I'm having a dinner, I save my favorite side for the last thing that I eat. So if it's usually for me, that's mashed potatoes. So if I'm having a steak and peas and corn and mashed potatoes, I'll eat everything else and leave the mashed potatoes for last because that's my favorite and I have low time preference. And there's a way of describing it much better than putting joy in the future. That's going to bother me. But I am the same way. I'm a cheerleader. There's nobody here at Verbal Graffiti in this project who's going to try to subdue your vice of being an online shopping addiction that you may have, but you have three jobs, so you can pay for it. Now, a lot of the nerds, a lot of the suits that are on CNBC, and they'll tell you you need to save all your money that you work for. You need to put it into a Roth IRA and an EFT and some type of mutual fund. Well, I don't know what any of those acronyms stand for. And all I know is if I put my money in those acronym funds, that I'm only going to see that money back with interest when I'm an old, crusty, unfuckable. And who wants all that money when nobody wants to fuck you? But what I do know, I might not know what an ETF stands for, but I know that I have $2,000 in my bank account. And when I see an overpriced jacket, I know that if I buy that jacket, I'll feel opulent with it around my shoulders for a month until I find another object that I feel that I need, nay, I deserve. That's what I know. It's about that feeling when you press the pay now and you get the thing that twirls till you say, oh, payment made, and you get that email with the long code, follow your order as it's in transit to your house. That feeling, I have it. I have it. I know where you're coming from. And yes, you deserve it. Good for you. Now, along with the CNBC people, there are some wise men who I don't know the name of, but they'll tell you, they'll plead with you that material goods are meaningless. That when you're dying, when you're on your deathbed, that those material goods that you've bought, that you've purchased over the years, they'll do no good for you. That you won't care about those, the fancy car and the house and the boat and the vacation home off the lake. None of that matters. What matters are the loved ones in your life that are beside you on your deathbed as you take your last breath. I don't know about you. I don't know about any of you, But when I'm on my deathbed, right, and I'm taking my last breath, I don't want to be looking up at a bunch of people with tears coming out of their eyes and snots coming out of your nose. That's not a great visual for the B-man. Now, I do know what I want when I'm lying on my deathbed, taking my last breath. I want to be lying on expensive Egyptian sheets with a crazy high threat count. That's what I do know I want. So don't you come at me telling me material goods ain't worth the money they cost, because they do. I don't want to be dying on some cheap hospital bed with hard sheets that are going to like just dig into my back and leave imprints. No. I want the most expensive, highest thread count bed linens I can get. Hey, let's use the Egyptians for an example. Like all those Egyptian queens that were buried in those pyramids, along with their gold and their jewelry and their diamonds, right? Like those tombs, like people travel the world to go look at those tombs in Egypt. Why? Because it was wealth, because it was materialism. Like those tombs are on display at some of the world's most well-known museums in the world's major cities. And we go see them because we want to see the artwork and the jewelry and the diamonds and the necklaces these Egyptian queens were wearing. Now compare that to every slub we know who's slowly putting money each paycheck into their 401k policy. All right, when they die, all they're going to have is a little tombstone with their name written on it. And within 100 years, their name's going to be worn off. So nobody's going to know who's buried in that spot. That little tombstone is not going to be displayed at a museum. It's not going to be there. But those Egyptian tombs that are just made out of pure gold and silver and diamonds and those rare and whatever jewelry is made out of. Like, there's a reason why we're in awe of those thousands of years later. It's because that represents wealth. It represents high society. It represents the good life. Nobody cares about the commoners. We care about the wealthy, the well-off. So that's, I want you to go further. I want you to, don't just go buy yourself a nice dress and a nice pair of heels. Like, I want you, next time you get paid, all right, and you got three jobs, you're getting a master's degree. Next time you buy a hot outfit, you get all dialed up. Don't just buy the outfit. What I want you to do is go out in that outfit and go to a spa. Go to a spa, spend a day at the spa, then go get a nice hot meal at the Royal 35 Steakhouse in New York City and end the night sipping an Irish coffee fireside at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel, again, in New York City. Make an entire day, evening, weekend with your money. Because you deserve it. It's the second half of the year, and January is coming. And once January comes, you can't spend again until June. Because like me, you have that low time preference. So spend while the spending is good. Good for you. I'm happy. You deserve all the materialism, all the material goods you're buying. You deserve them. Yes, I'm so happy for you. Let's go look in some photos. You may recall that last episode, episode 80, this is episode 81 if you're listening in chronological order, that I had said I'm back on the dating apps. Now, back in the day, I used OkCupid. Of all the dating apps I've used, that one was the best for me. It was where I met the best babes with the best personality, had some success. As of late, the last couple of years, no success. But if you are in the game, or if you're still in the game trying to get that worn out poon that's left out there, do know and most of you don't need to be told this, that Instagram is the number one dating app. Maybe if you're a little younger, in your 20s, maybe it's TikTok. Now, I don't fuck with TikTok. I do post clips of verbal graffiti on TikTok, so give us a follow there if you're listening and don't know about that. But yeah, I use Instagram. I've slid into a number of DMs. Normally, I don't hear back. But every once in a while, I've had a little bit of success with sliding into the DMs. There's even a song about sliding into the DMs. So, hey, take your shot on Instagram. I've had more success there recently than anywhere else. I bring up Instagram because I'm on Hinge. Now, I don't spend much time on Hinge, as everyone who's on Hinge will tell you they don't spend much time on Hinge. I would spend more time on that dating app, but at least for me, I only get a limited number of swipes before they cut me off, and I get, for 24 hours, I'm not allowed to do any more swiping. So I spend maybe 5 minutes a night just looking, and it's mostly fatty single moms and ladies with terrible tattoos, and then a bunch of bots and women who just... They want Chad. They don't want me. But there is, back in the day, when I was on a dating app, if a lady had a Instagram handle in her bio, I would swipe left. They don't want her, want nothing to do, just keep it moving. As of late, the last month or so, if I see a lady who looks like a real person, not a it's obviously, there are some profiles where it's obviously a bot, if she looks like a Russian hooker. But if it's a real lady, a real babe, and she has her Instagram handle within her bio, oh, the B-man goes to Instagram, and I slide into her DMs. Now, I have yet to get a response from anybody from Hinge or Bumble or Tinder through Instagram. But it is amusing to me that a little bit of pixie dust of humor, knowing that that lady's opening up her DM. Sorry, that babe is opening up her DM. And she wants to hear from a Chad. At least I think that's why she has an IG handle in her profile. Let me know if I'm wrong. But as she opens it up and it's a message saying, hey, it's the B-man for Verbal Graffiti. You want to get a drink and go mini golfing? And then she looks at my profile, sees all this, and instantly deletes. That is just a little bit of humor that I know it leads to nothing, but it fills my humor jar. I get a sick, sadistic pleasure knowing she has to waste just one to get rid of me. There's something funny about that. There's nothing funny about what I found on Reddit earlier today. All right, I'll put the photo here. And if you're listening via podcast on Apple, Spotify, do remember to like, subscribe, and share with an inmate or a homeless person or somebody at Goodwill or your landlord or... your loan shark. The degenerates of society. Share an episode or a clip of Verbal Graffiti with them. But if you're watching, I'm posting a photo of a coupon, not just any coupon. Have you ever gotten those pamphlets in the mail where the entire page is all coupons for a fast food joint like McDonald's? This one's Burger King. But is there anything more terrifying than a coupon for a free Subway sandwich that has fine print on it? I don't think there is. Yeah, that fine print is terrifying because you know, if you walk into a Subway store and you hand the sandwich artist the coupon, and then you think you're getting a free sandwich, and then the sandwich artist gives you back the coupon and goes, no, you need to work on your reading comprehension skills. You are illiterate. You read the fine print wrong. There, there might be nothing more embarrassing than having that happen to you. And that has happened to me more than once. So when I get these coupons in the mail, it's very exciting, but it's also very terrifying. And to be honest, I probably have taken advantage of these coupons fewer than 10 times in my life because that fear I have of how much fine print there is. I mean, it's crazy. You look at those coupons, and more than 50% of the coupon is fine print. And they're all the same, yet they're all a little bit different. Just enough to trip us all up. Like you see a coupon where it's a buy one sandwich, get one half off. You're thinking, great. But you know the fine print's like, okay, well, it has to, you can only use one coupon. It can't be used with any other offers. It has to be a sandwich of equal value or less. And it cannot be a sandwich that you'd actually get at Subway, like meatball or roast beef or chicken. It's some weird limited edition sub that you've never heard of. That's the only one you could use it with. And, you know, you could only use it. You could only use it on certain dates and times. So you can only use this coupon on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday between 12 and 5 p.m. and only at participating stores. And it has to be used by, you know, and the date's always either like today or the end of the year. There's no like 30-day wait period. It's you got to get there right now, or you put it in your wallet and then you forget about it and you forget to use it by the end of the year. You see it next year, like, ah, fuck, I could have had a free 6-cent sandwich. But there's so many stipulations that I'm at a point in my life where I just don't fuck with it. Like, I get the coupons now and I look at those, that entire page of coupons, it lowers my self-esteem when I look at them. And that's why I really do despise these type of coupons, because I look at them and I go, I ain't smart enough for this. Like, I ain't smart enough to get my free Subway cookie. And yeah, with the B-Man, would anyone not want to go into a Subway and get a free cookie? Like, fuck yeah, I want a free Subway cookie. But but do you want to go into a Subway thinking you're getting a free Subway cookie and then realizing, no, the coupon isn't valid, the stipulation doesn't work, then you walk out of the store without the cookie? That's some PTSD right there. I'm not saying, hey, you walked in Iraq and an IED blew your leg off, that kind of PTSD, but it's pretty damn close. Like that's pretty devastating, walking into a Subway thinking you're getting a chocolate chip cookie only to realize, nope, you're an idiot, you can't read, and walking out with your overpriced sandwich. I am saying that we need the equivalent of a VA department for us people who use Subway coupons and realize that the coupon is not valid. Like, we need a hotline. We need someone to talk to talk us off the ledge, to get us in a better mental state, because that's a big cloud on your day when you think you're getting a free cookie or a free soft drink or buy one, get one free, and you're not getting any of it. And you're like, fuck, man, I thought I was getting a 12-inch sub for $7. And I walked out of that store with a 12-inch sub for $13. And then I had to spend $17 because I had to get the combo with the drink and the bag of chips that only has like 3 chips in it. It's fuckery. It's fuckery. Like, I can't. I wish I had gotten a high enough score on my SAT to be able to use these coupons. Like, you look at this paper of coupons. You need to have an SAT score above 1300 to even attempt to even attempt to use one of them. And it does bring up another topic, which is coupons. I have another thing with coupons. The reason why I don't use them is because I feel cheap when I use a coupon. Now, I know that using a coupon is prudent, that I should use them, but there is something about handing the person at the takeout person, go, hey, here's my coupon that I've been saving up. Like, there's something about that where I feel cheap and I don't like that feeling. So I don't use coupons. And it's somewhat similar to if you go to a grocery store, and I still try to use the checkout person. I don't even know the name, but like the self-checkout is like, no. You're being paid. The grocery store is not paying me, all right? If the grocery store is not paying the B-man, then I don't want to be doing the work that the people who are getting paid do. So I'm going through the line where the checkout person is there. And sometimes when you're in those lines, like an old hag will break out her checking book here and like, what the fuck? Like, I'm going to be here forever. Like, I got to get home and scroll through accent and wank off. Like, hurry it the fuck up. And same thing with coupons. Like, an old hag who pulls out, like, the little wallet and he has all the coupons. And like, we just need an app where it's like, hey, everything you buy, you put the app down, and it automatically, boop, 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 gets all the coupons. That might actually be a thing. I just might not be hip, up to date with all that. But, yeah, apps should... Actually, now that I think about it, apps really have taken over for coupons. So that entire rant right there was unneeded. Okay. Yeah, terrified. Give me one coupon. Do not give me 25 on one page. All right. Speaking of pages, let's get back to The Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence, published date 1977. We are now on chapter 2. Top of page 29. Let's read two pages together if you're reading along. I guess I'm the crazy one now, she thought. Oh, I feel so foolish being there. At that moment, the door opened and someone came in. Pamela whirled around to see who it was. Facing her was a tall man, about 6'3", dressed in a loose white shirt made of supple silk, tight black trousers, and high polished boots of black leather. His face was authoritative and darky handsome, with piercing eyes and a small mustache. His hair was jet black, like his wife's, but tinged with silver gray. He wore a round silver medallion around his neck on a silver chain. His body was slender, but extremely well built. He had an air of calm and strength about him. His appearance was so forceful that Pamela found herself gasping slightly when she caught sight of him. "Why are you afraid?" he asked in a low, smooth voice, noting her anxiety. His eyes seemed to burn into Pamela's as if they could fathom her most secret, hidden thoughts. "I'm a little nervous, I guess," she said, blushing slightly. There's no need to be, he said softly, moving toward her with slow deliberation. You're Pamela Burns. Yes, yes, she replied. Sit down, won't you? He said, pointing at the large armchair. At his instructions, Pamela sat in the chair while Carlsberg pulled another chair close to hers and sat in it facing her. He leaned back, crossed his legs, and let his hands rest languidly on the upholstered arms of the chair. What have you come to see me about? Pamela twisted her wedding ring nervously as she struggled to find words. My husband and I are having some difficulty, she said after a long pause. What sort of difficulty? I guess it's, no matter how she tried, she couldn't say it. Sexual? The doctor inquired, with his eyebrows slightly arched. Yes, she replied in a voice scarcely audible. How did you know? It's a common problem with young couples. Nothing to worry about. Tell me, how long have you been married? A month. A little over a month. Go suck a fat one.